And welcome to the second podcast from Better Off Out. My name is Rupert Matthews. I'm National Campaign Manager here. And on this podcast, we're going to start with a trip up to Durham to have a little chat about European culture. Then we're moving on to Birmingham to talk about one of the bolder claims made by the Europhiles and whether or not it's true. And finally, we end up in Nottingham at the Young Independence Conference, where we have a chat with a couple of MEPs. And then you can listen finally to a speech by my colleague Simon Richards of the Freedom Association. Right, well, here we are on Cathedral Green in Durham. The cathedral's just over there. And one of the reasons I wanted to come here was just to point out some of the magnificent architecture around this green, which goes right back to medieval times. The cathedral, of course, goes back to the 11th century, and it includes all sorts of different artistic influences and architectural traditions. It was founded by the Normans, built originally in the Norman style. But since then, it's got early English sections, it's got decorated Gothic, it's got perpendicular Gothic. Some of these styles originated here in England, but a lot of the artistic and architectural heritage of this magnificent building actually comes from Europe and European craftsmen and European ideas. So right back then in medieval times, it was possible for culture and for art to travel across the international boundaries throughout Europe and come here to Britain as well. So there is a referendum on our membership of the European Union coming up, and if we vote to leave the European Union, which I believe we should, there's absolutely nothing to stop all those cultural and artistic links continuing as they do now, and as they have done for absolutely centuries, as evidenced by the magnificent architecture here in Durham. So those of you that are interested in art, in the arts, and our cultural history, you will know that by leaving the European Union, we will remain part of the cultural mainstream in Europe, and indeed, as a friend standing outside the Union rather than as a reluctant member, we will be in a position to stand proud and become leaders of European art and culture, just as we were when these magnificent buildings around me were built in medieval times. Leaving Durham, we head down to Birmingham. We make a stop at their Hall of Memory, which is really the main war memorial in Birmingham that was erected after the First World War. And we stop to have a look at the claims by Europhiles that it's been the European Union which has kept peace in Europe over the past 50 years, and whether or not that remarkably bold claim is actually true. Well, behind me is the Hall of Memory here in Centenary Square, Birmingham. And it's effectively the Birmingham War Memorial. And I was having a look at the foundation stone laid by the then Prince of Wales in 1923. And I thought I'd just scribble down what it says. It says, of the 150,000 who answered the call to arms, 12,320 fell, 35,000 came home disabled. At the going down of the sun in the morning, we will remember them. See to it that they shall not have suffered and died in vain. It's a very moving monument. During weekdays it's open inside, you can go in, and it's got names of the fallen carved there. So what's this got to do with the European Union? Well, one of the great claims that the European Union makes for itself is that it's stopped wars in Europe for the past 50 years. That is, of course, complete nonsense, but it is something that the yes men are going to be pushing very hard in the referendum, something that certainly whenever I've spoken to MEPs from Germany, France and so on, they passionately believe it. They genuinely believe that the European Union is a force for peace and that it has stopped wars in Europe. Now, of course, it's complete nonsense. Very largely for the past 50 years, Europe was split between the communist bloc and the free world. So it was NATO that was the bastion of peace. It was stopping the communist countries from invading Western Europe, not the European Union, which of course doesn't have a defence arm and doesn't have any form of military might. But even if you take their claims at face value, quite clearly Europe has not been entirely free of wars. There was the war in Yugoslavia when that multinational state was breaking up. And what did the European Union do about that? Absolutely nothing. And recently, actually, things have got even worse. European Union likes to strut the world stage with its diplomacy. But in Ukraine, that got to be very dangerous indeed. Now, we all know that Putin's Russia is bad-tempered and powerful. What the European Union effectively did was walk into its lair and poke it with a sharp stick. That's not the way to go about getting on peacefully with a large, powerful, bad-tempered neighbour. So very far from the European Union guaranteeing peace for the past 50 years, it's done nothing of the kind. And in fact, it has recently started to become quite a dangerous organisation. Not just in Ukraine, but you look at what's going on in Greece. This is an organisation that's meant to be fostering goodwill and harmony. And what have we got? We've got rioting in the streets, poverty, and an entire nation heading for destitution and resenting the Germans, who they see as pushing them that way. European Union, a force for peace? Not a chance. How am I going to vote in the referendum? I'm going to vote no. And for the final three pieces in this podcast, we move on to Nottingham, where the Young Independents were holding their conference. Young Independents, of course, are the youth movement of UKIP. And while I was there, I bumped into Ray Finch, one of the MEPs for South East England. We had a little chat with him about youth politics, European referendum and one or two other things. Right, I'm here at the Young Independents Conference in Nottingham. I've bumped into Ray Finch, one of the UKIP MEPs.
Hi, Rupert.
Hiya. How do you think the conference is going?
Oh, brilliant. We've got better, younger, more vibrant people than ever before. These people are actually the future. What they are the people who care about the party and about the country. They're not people who are just here because they see the chance for a cushy little number like you get in other parties.
Yeah, and I must say, I've been very impressed with the quality of the speeches there, because, you know, sometimes you go to youth political conferences and, you know,
yeah,
it can be a little
bit... It's all a bit weirdy, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah.
You know, they're all trying to be sensible and... But these people are actually, they mean what they say, they're thinking about it, and they're working out to get us free again.
That's right. Now, of course, you know, coming from Better Off Out, our main focus is the referendum.
Yeah.
I was wondering, are you getting any sort of feel on the ground in your area about this?
Yes. What we're seeing now is that we're seeing that people are actually starting to think about what the issues are. And it's not just about the political issues. It's about what it means, the pound in their pockets, as Harold Wilson said. That sort of thing, you know, I'm showing my age now, but they're thinking about the economic arguments about it. You know, they understand now that the 3 million jobs lie, is that's what it is, it's a lie.
Yeah, right.
And if we can start to say to people and bring out leaflets that are saying, this is what it means to you, this is what it means to your future, this is what it means to your children's future, then we're starting to win the arguments. Because before, with ourselves, it was pretty much a dry political argument. But we have to make it relevant to people in their everyday lives. And
I think you're right, and certainly our experience is when you start sort of relating it to what the European Union is costing individual families, the impact it's having on people's day-to-day lives. Because, you know, it's all very well sort of talking about the you know, sovereignty and so on, but when you start realising how the European Union is interfering in day-to-day lives,
yes,
people are really quite shocked.
Well, exactly. Our last speaker that we just saw now, he was talking about the interference that EU laws had on his business.
Yes.
And how it was difficult to run a business. And there are millions upon millions of small businessmen and women in this country who see this and understand it on a daily basis. If we can get round and tell them all, you know, if we're out of the European Union, then we have a chance of making your business life easier.
Yeah.
So you can do better things, you can employ more people, and everyone will be better off, then we'll win the debate.
Absolutely right. Anyway, it's a busy conference, I know you've got to go. Thanks for taking time to talk to us.
My pleasure, Rupert. Thank you. Cheers.
Cheerio.
discuss things amongst ourselves, and we can have proper conversations and decide on what we do for policy and how we go forward. And afterwards, we can shake hands with each other when we disagree. As a veteran of battles within other parties, I can tell you that doesn't happen anywhere else. They go away afterwards and sharpen the knife to see how quickly they can stab each other in the back. At least with UKIP, we identify each other, we know where we stand on things, we have a good discussion. Normally we have a pint afterwards, and we're okay.
Okay, Bill, I was listening to your speech earlier here at the Young Independents Conference. You mentioned about in UKIP that when you have disagreements or debates about policy and so on, you know, you argue like mad, but then you go for a drink afterwards and get on. Now, obviously, coming from Better Off Out, I'm really interested in the referendum campaign. I was wondering, how do you think yourself and other people from UKIP are going to react to being asked to work with people from other parties on this?
Well, I will have the same approach. We're fighting for a common cause. I'm more than happy to get stuck in with people. Mm-hmm. We can argue and fight about the minutiae until the cows come home. The overall cause is the important one, and that's what really matters. And when it comes down to it, you know, we'll fight it out, and then we'll get out there on the streets, we'll work together, and we'll shake hands on things. And if there's disagreements, well, let's overcome them. The cause is bigger than any small differences.
Well, that's right. I mean, I couldn't agree more. Now, of course, we don't know when the referendum's going to be. Could be as early as maybe April next year, or we might be running on for another 18 months, 2 years. And of course, there are going to be local elections and such like, sort of scattered around about there. But are you confident that, you know, like you could campaign against, let's say, somebody from Labour during a local election,
yeah,
and then a month later be handing out leaflets with them for the referendum?
I pride myself on being a pretty fierce fighter. And when it comes to these elections, I will fight in people tough and nail. However, after that, around that, alongside that, we can shake hands and talk because we've got a bigger issue. There is something that unites us. There are differences which we, you know, we'll have a proper democratic debate on. But when it comes down to it, what really matters is freedom for our country to get out of the EU. And I'll work with Labour, Socialists, Greens, Conservatives, Liberals, anybody in order to achieve that. I mean anybody.
Great. Well, that's really good, because I've been talking to people from the Conservative Party, Labour Party. You know, I've even found some Eurosceptic Liberal Democrats over the past few weeks. And pretty much everyone's saying the same thing. You know, this referendum is so important to the future of our country. That they want to work with everyone, and let's hope we can do that. So we're launching our campaign in September. I know you people are launching your campaign in September, and so I'll be seeing you on the campaign trail, and we'll all be working together.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks for taking the time. I know you're a busy chap here at the conference.
It's a pleasure.
Great, thanks very much.
Cheers.
And finally on this broadcast, we remain in Nottingham. We're going to listen to a speech given by my colleague Simon Richards, who's in charge of the Freedom Association. Now, Better Off Out is associated with the Freedom Association, all part of the same umbrella group, if you like. So have a listen to what Simon's talking about. He does touch on Europe, but he also covers a whole load of other subjects, which I think you might find interesting.
I don't know how I follow that, ladies and gentlemen, but thank you so much, Joe. And I do think, I don't go overboard and everything, but I do think you're incredibly lucky to have somebody of Joe's ability doing this. And I'm very impressed by the whole of this setup, and it's great to see so many of you here. And a fantastic lineup, after me, anyway, of speakers you've got. So I really hope you're going to have a superb couple of days here. And I have to say that I was a little bit surprised when I saw where you were meeting, the Osborne suite. I've heard George Osborne called a few things, but never sweet. But I hope that despite that, you're going to have a great time here. And I think it's also quite an inspired place to pick Nottingham, actually. Because Nottingham, as I'm sure any of you here who know your Robin Hood will be aware, Nottingham was the home of the real sort of baddies, the sheriff of Nottingham, who grasped people's money. And really things haven't changed that much because it's also the headquarters of the Inland Revenue. So somebody at that organisation, I think, has a bit of a sense of humour. And actually that brings me on to what I want to talk about, which is that I think that your body is, as Joe mentioned in start, you are a quite unique body, not only in that you're the only youth organisation calling to leave the European Union and to free Britain from the EU, but you're also the only, to the best of my knowledge, the only major youth organisation linked to any party that is actually in favour of more freedom and more liberty, more individual liberty. You know, all of the other parties, to varying degrees, they all deny it, but they are all to varying degrees in favour of a bigger state. They'd probably like that gigantic Inland Revenue building to be even bigger than it already is. And I think that's something you should all be very, very proud of, and something you should really hold dear and not give up lightly. And I want to tell you a bit of a cautionary tale, if I may. During my sort of lifetime, that goes practically back to Sir Queen Victoria, the political landscape in this country was dominated by the growth of one party. It came from almost nowhere. And it was a party that that back in 1970 only had six MPs. And they went on to win by-election after by-election, council after council. They soared in their support, not only in the opinion polls, but in the number of MPs. And eventually, of course, they took power. Now, I'm talking, of course, about the Liberal Democrats. If you look at most of the last 30 years of the Liberal Democrats, it was almost unrelieved success. They went from, and I know that quite a few people in UKIP, the people who've masterminded many of UKIP's successes in the local elections, have modelled themselves on the very brilliant tactics that the Lib Dems deployed to win around the country. But, of course, you all know that it all ended rather badly for the Lib Dems. At the last general election, so after 45 years, I mentioned they, in 1970, they had six seats. They now have eight. So in 45 years, they've had a net gain of two MPs. Now, you would be quite right to comment, given the shocking fact that UKIP gained 4 million votes and only one seat, to say, well, there's more to life than the number of MPs, and that is true. But I think what's much more sad for the Liberal Democrats is that not only did they not succeed as they wanted in terms of power, but that they, in doing so, they gave up their principles. They gave up their principles as well, and I think that's much more sad. And they did it for power. And where have they ended up? Nowhere. And I think when you look at what happened to the Lib Dems, their skill, which did them very well for a long time, was to be trying to be all things to all men. So if you went down into the southwest of England, the sort of part of the world I come from, the Lib Dems there used to sort of actually talk quite a vaguely Eurosceptic talk, you know, because they knew that's what people liked to hear. And if you went to, say, the northeast of England, they'd come out sort of talking quite socialist. Of course, that can succeed in the short term. Ultimately, it leads to ruin. I'm sure some of you will realise that, you know, I'm just trying to give, if I may, some, I suppose, a bit of a warning for UKIP, that it's very easy to chase after short-term votes and to throw away your principles. But in the long term, it's sticking to your principles, sticking to what you believe in. That's what really matters, and I think that that is what you should be doing as a party. So, and the glorious thing I think about Young Independents, since it's an organisation I supported right from the very start, and I have to say that we've often held some receptions and joint events with YI at UKIP party conferences, because I was always quite keen to encourage them. And I can tell you, when we first started doing that, you could have got all of the YI people on just one of these tables. And that was even when we were providing free drink as well. So I think that the progress that you guys have made is just phenomenal, and I really do applaud you for it. But I think what's also impressed me enormously about YI is that that you do seem to care about principles, and you have a belief in that word, independence. And independence is more than just the independence of our country from the EU. I could go on talking forever about the iniquities of the EU. You know all about that, and Nigel will do it a lot better than I can. So I don't want to talk about that now. But it's actually our own independence as individuals that matters. And there's not a single party in the country at the moment, other than UKIP, that is giving any serious thought to that. And I think it's something, as I say, you should be enormously proud of, and you should, I think, value your freedoms. I was watching a programme about the BBC the other day, where it showed that Peter Sellers, who's a comedian from sort of long before your time, but he was sort of begging, he was asking the favour of somebody at the BBC to ask if they could help him apply for a telephone. That's what, and it sounds ridiculous, but there was a time in this country when the GPO, which is now Telecom, was the sole provider, the monopoly provider of telephones, and you had to sort of try and curry favours with people to get a phone. I mean, can you imagine that? And there is no need for the state to be involved in so much of what we do. Most of the things in your lives are so much better done by you as individuals, making your own decisions, by small businesses, which are the biggest growing sector in this economy. And there's far too much dependence on the state. If the weather's bad, what's the government going to do about it? It's down to people to take responsibility for their own lives. And I think that's something that when I was in prehistoric days when I was at university, I was massively influenced by two books mainly. One was George Orwell's Animal Farm, which taught me that socialism, call it whatever you like, simply does not work. The state is not the way to run things. And brilliantly said, if you haven't read that book, I do urge you to. And it's nice and small too, which is quite rare. I do like a small book. And the other one, another small book, is Hayek's Road to Serfdom, and that to this day is what guides me and my views. And some people might say, "Oh, well, are you an ideologue?" And I think that's quite unfair, because of course one has to adjust one's beliefs to the reality, to the situation. But if you don't have any foundations there in the first place, it's very hard to tackle any situation at all. And in my view is, if you stick to your beliefs in freedom of the individual, in individualism, in belief that the individual should come above the state, that we are all better when the state is a servant, not our master, then I think that you will continue to thrive and continue to grow. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, that wraps it up for our second podcast. I'm going to be back soon with some other things. We're going to try and mix it up a little bit. Look forward to meeting you again next time. Bye.